This is Pure Decking, show number 570 for Thursday, July 18th, 1968. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game. And I agree with an article I saw earlier today. We should, when AI makes stuff up, we shouldn't call it hallucinations. We should just call it bullshitting, because that's what it's doing. It's just trying to guess the right answer. So I agree with that.
Guessing at best.
So, anyways, tonight we have an Are You? What's up, Are You?
Well, not much. Not much. Been a big week, but not a big week in tech.
No. No, we're struggling for stories. It's all politics, 24/7.
I mean, even the tech news has been political.
Yeah.
All these companies dumping out of DEI.
Which is not really something to talk about on here, because I don't care.
Give a fuck, man. It's already ruined anything I give a fuck about, so I just snoped out.
I mean, to be fair, anything where you say, you know what, we're going to focus on, you know, we're going to focus on the core of the company, making better, you know, making our product and not politics.
I watch I'm for a few it. Of these. These Gen Z guys, like, well, why didn't Gen X get all butthurt and upset when all this stuff started? Well, Gen X pretty much only have so many fucks to give, and we gave those fucks away when we were kids, and now we don't care.
So, well, that, and a lot of people didn't notice it, too.
I really hit my radar in 2005. 2008 is when I went, oh shit, it's going this way. And 2012, I was like, oh fuck, here it comes.
Well, when I first started seeing stuff like that, I'm like, yeah, you'll have a few fringe companies do it, but most companies aren't going to waste a serious amount of resources on this. They're not going to risk alienate half the country over shit like this. You know, Michael Jordan famously said, you know, when they asked him why he didn't, you know, get political, and he said, well, Republicans buy shoes too.
Exactly.
So, oh, we're going to have a late arrival.
Maybe a madman inbound. I remember in the 90s when they had a crack at it. It didn't last very long then. This has been the longest I've seen it last.
Well, the culture's a little bit more accepting of it now, so...
It depends part of the history book, say, do you believe it started...
User was moved to your channel.
...to appease the, Occupy Wall Street people?
Yeah.
They just paid them off, and they go have your own little fucking things.
We have a madman?
I'm in.
Hello, how's life?
I didn't know if you intended to join the show or not, so I just dragged you in to see...
Awesome. I was trying to, but my mouse decided to stop working.
Is it wireless?
Yep.
Yeah, I don't like wireless mice. The battery's
That's why you don't go wireless. Yeah. And it's always in the middle of a fucking fight or something in a video game.
Or when you really need to get something done and you can't, you know.
Yeah, you just need to print that boarding pass out right now because you're running late a little bit.
Oh, yeah, that would be a terrible time for that to die.
And then you can't find the replacement batteries.
Or they've gotten weird white fuzz all over them because they don't really go through them that quickly.
So, okay, true story. I a while back, I bought one of these battery caddy things. It's this big plastic briefcase looking thing to load up all your batteries in on, because I was like, oh, that's a good idea. That's nice and organized. Well, yeah, no, you still end up with batteries everywhere. But anyways, I was going through it because I needed some batteries, and I didn't realize how old the batteries in it had gotten, because half of them had grown the white fuzz. All of the 9 volts that were in it were from like 10 years ago, so they weren't holding a charge. And the gag of the 9 volt was I had a smoke detector that was beeping, so I was trying to put a new battery in it to shut it the hell up, and it wasn't working. And I'm like, these are new batteries. What, you know, they've never been used. What's going on? I didn't realize they were 10 fucking years old. So, yeah.
It was the same, dude. Like, my wife put the electric heater on for the first time this year, and I walked past and I said, did you clean that out before you turned it on?
Nope.
Like, nope. I said, man, if we had smoke detectors, I'd be fucking pissed right now.
Gotta love the smell of that burning dust, fucking madman. Dust, seriously? Yeah. Maker of suicide pods. I mean, that was a gag in Futurama. What the fuck, man?
It's a real thing.
Oh, yeah. They're you already climb up and in, running.
It asks you 3 questions. And at the end of it, if you hit the I want to die button, it locks you in so you cannot open the door, and then fills the container with nitrogen oxide.
Yeah, that's 2021 that was published. Yeah, they're actually in use.
$20.
Wow.
It's $20. Get into a suicide booth.
So it doesn't lock the door till after you press that last button. So it's $20 to kill somebody and make it look like a suicide. Got it.
Yeah.
They tell me there's not an anti-human operation going on right now. Come on, try and convince me.
Oh, I'm not. No bet.
Dystopian as fuck.
Fuck it, eh, dude?
Well, it's going to be a fun show.
Yeah. Oh, dude, you couple this news with the fucking movie I'm watching? Holy shit. I'm just leaking depression today. It's good. Anyone's curious, it's called Land of Mine, and it's about some German teenagers having to clean up a beach full of landmines by hand.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty fucking dog, dude.
I kind of play frisbee with one of those now.
I was just thinking, are they allowed to just sit on the side and chuck rocks for a while? I mean, that's
No. When they say they've successfully cleared an area, they get bayonet marched through that area, linking arms, so that if they have missed a landmine, they'll all blow up.
Oh, that's fucking dark.
Yeah, it's a fucking dark movie. I did not realize it when I started watching that it was going to be this fucking dark. Warning, if anyone is going to watch it, it is not in English. It is in German.
Oh, what was the movie? Some of my family started watching it thinking it was going to be a comedy. Poor Things? I think that's what it was called.
What was it called, sorry?
Poor Things?
I think I've seen that one.
Yeah, Poor Things, that's it. They thought it was going to be this comedy, because I guess the thing listed said, oh, it's this hilarious movie. Yeah, that's... Most people would not find that to be a comedy. That's just a really fucked up porno.
Yeah, Requiem for a Dream, that's a comedy.
Yeah, especially there at the end.
Yes.
All right. Let's get in the first article. It's from Torrent Freak. At a time when many pirate sites seem increasingly elusive, oftentimes almost transient as domains, identities, and branding come and go, static enforcement targets are in limited supply. Same can't be said for internet service providers. And over the past few years, several have paid a very steep price for not engaging in piracy per se, but for not responding aggressively enough against subscribers mostly accused of repeatedly pirating movies and music. All right. This article kind of goes on for a bit. There's a very specific part of this I want to get to, and that's what I want to talk about. Before the weekend, dozens of record labels, including UMG, Warner, and Sony, filed a massive copyright lawsuit against Verizon in a New York federal court. The common or in common with previous lawsuits that accused rivals of similar inaction, Verizon Communications Inc., Verizon Services Corp., and Cello Partnership, DBA Verizon Wireless, stand accused of assisting subscribers to download and share pirated music by not doing enough to stop them. The label's complaint introduces Verizon as one of the largest ISPs in the country. Probably true. One that, quote, knowingly provides its high-speed service to a massive online community of pirates, unquote. Pretty sure they don't advertise that, but okay. Knowledge of infringement, the label say, was established at Verizon over a period of several years during which it received hundreds of thousands of copyright notices referencing instances of infringement allegedly carried out by its subscribers. The complaint cites Verizon subscribers' persistent use of BitTorrent networks to download and share pirated music, which Verizon allegedly failing to curtail their activity. Okay, so what they're saying is the reason Verizon is responsible is because we sent them shit tons of email about it. I love the argument. It's like we sent them all kinds of notices, therefore they're responsible for it. Quote, while Verizon is famous for its Can You Hear Me Now advertising campaign, it has intentionally chosen not to listen to complaints from copyright owners, instead taking action in response to those infringement notices as the law requires. Verizon ignored plaintiffs' notices and buried its head in the sand. Unquote, the label's right. Quote, undeterred, infringing subscribers identified in plaintiffs' notices continue to use Verizon service to infringe plaintiffs' copyrights with impunity. Meanwhile, Verizon continued to provide its high-speed service to thousands of known repeat infringers so it could continue to collect millions of dollars from them. Unquote. So what the lawsuit is saying is that because the movie studios have pointed at these people and said, bad, bad, naughty, naughty, they should not be allowed on the internet anymore. The movie studios want to determine whether or not you're allowed to access the internet. Just saying. Through this lawsuit, which references piracy of songs recorded by artists including the Rolling Stones, Ariana Grande, Bob Dylan, Bruno Mars, Elvis Presley. Shouldn't some of this stuff be... never mind. Dua Lipa, Drake, and others, the label suggests that Verizon will have no choice but to hear them now. The label claims that since early 2020, the representatives have sent more than 340,000 infringement notices to Verizon. These notifications, quote, clearly and unambiguously, unquote, advise the ISP of its subscribers, quote, blatant and systemic use of Verizon's internet service, unquote, to download, copy, and share plaintiffs' copyrighted sound recordings via BitTorrent networks. Quote, the scope of repeat infringement on Verizon's network is staggering. Thousands of Verizon subscribers were the subject of 20 or more notices from plaintiffs, and more than 500 subscribers were the subject of 100 or more notices, unquote, the complaint claims. Okay. I'm going to stop right here for a second. When I used to work for a university, I got these things all the time. And these notices, they're a generated form. They're literally, we saw somebody running BitTorrent. You could actually make some really good arguments that these things wouldn't hold up in court because you didn't see the full file. You didn't verify that they were actually sharing it back out. You just saw an IP address participating in a BitTorrent swarm. Basically, you connect to the BitTorrent, you know, like you download the torrent file, put it in your client, and then just go get a list of all the other clients that are, you know, listed in the swarm, right? That's what they're doing. They're not verifying that they actually have the file. They're not verifying that they're actually hosting it out. They're not verifying anything. They're just pulling an IP address from a list of people connected to a BitTorrent swarm. Now, theoretically, you know, in practice, if you're connected to a swarm, you're likely downloading or seeding the file. But point being, you could make some fun arguments in court about what these notices actually are because they're not targeting a person. They're targeting an IP address and a timestamp. They're already kind of a bitch to verify. And they also are often wrong. I've gotten notices for people who, for IP addresses that were not assigned to anybody at the time, that weren't actually in use. I've gotten notices for copiers. I've gotten notices for routing equipment. And I don't mean one of the ports on the routing equipment. I mean the management port of the router, the one that no traffic should be passing out of. So these things don't make any sense. When you get them a lot of the time. So they're noise. Now, that said, a lot of them are targeting people, and there are ways of dealing with them. But they're sitting there saying, well, somebody got 100 or more notices. I had days where a single IP address got more than 1,000 notices when I was working for the school. Now, I had already automated the tool at this point, so it was more funny than anything. But these notices were for the same three files over and over again. It wasn't 1,000 different files. It was just they kept sending out a notice on this one IP address, and when you looked at the timestamps, it was basically every 30 seconds. So their script was messing up is what was happening, and it was just rerunning and download, you know, and kept sending more and more and more notices. So saying, oh, somebody was the subject of 100 or more notices doesn't actually mean shit if you know anything about how these notices go out. One particularly egregious Verizon subscriber was single-handedly the subject of 4,450 infringement notices from plaintiffs alone. So what? I mean, you know, the way they generate these things, so fucking what? It means nothing.
You're not getting 3,000 notifications a day? Get good, faggot.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, it's just like, well, actually, no, they've got some bullet points from the lawsuit here. On March 2021 to at least August of 2023, a Verizon subscriber with an IP address of 100.73.something, they garbled it, was identified in 4,450 infringement notices sent on at least 659 separate days. So let's average out the math here. 4,450 divided by 659. So they were sending 7 notices a day. How do we know it's not the same 7 files? Because I've seen that shit. I would come in when I worked at the school and run my script for a weekend, because I didn't come in on the weekends and run this shit. And you would see the same notices for somebody like every hour all weekend, because they left their computer on. You know, running LimeWire or FrostWire or whatever the fuck, right?
Hey, they were one of the good people. They were seeding.
Yeah. But they've got, you know, a couple other here. So 2,703 infringement notices sent on 441 days. Again, these numbers don't mean anything. They don't tell you enough about what's really going on.
They're meant to be big and scary.
Of course they are. But this is the same kind of stuff I have to deal with at work, with metrics and stuff like that, where people want to put in really dumb numbers. It's like, oh, well, we want to see the average number of vulnerabilities across all the hosts. Why? That tells you nothing.
Yep.
It's like, well, it's a statistic. Well, okay, yeah, but it's not a useful one. I don't care how many vulnerabilities it has. I care about the fact that it has that vulnerability. The 400 others are all, you know, unpatched Windows Explorer shit. I mean, that's not great, but it's a server, so you shouldn't be web browsing from it. So, I mean, you know, it's like, I want the important things, not numbers that prove you can put bullshit into Excel. And that's what this stuff is it's largely useless, especially if Verizon wasn't responding to these notices. They'd basically be sending the same notices over and over and over again. So the fact that they basically has said, well, we sent Verizon 2,680 emails over 251 days. Okay. Was anybody monitoring the mailbox? Did anybody care? Or you're just saying we sent them lots of email. Again, that's what all these numbers amount to.
Account.
It's like, so what? The plaintiffs state that Verizon acknowledged receipt of the notices sent by a third-party vendor, OPSEC Online LLC, but in the terms of response, chose to ignore them, quote, willfully blinding itself to information that prioritizes its own profits over its legal obligations, unquote. The complaint, this again gets back to the Digital Millennium Copyright Act being just bad law.
Name one company that doesn't maximize profits over the law. You're not doing it right. I
think that's what LLCs are supposed to be. They don't usually
get caught doing shady shit all the time. They make, $100 million on shady fucking shit, you know, robbing people's accounts. And then after the court case and everything, they get fined $50 million.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the cost of business. I don't buy that fucking line for a second.
Yeah. The complaint makes it clear that if Verizon wanted to avoid being held liable for subscribers' violation, termination of repeat infringers' accounts or similar meaningful action would have been appropriate steps to take. Instead, it's alleged that Verizon, quote, routinely thumbed its nose, unquote, in response to complaints, while continuing to provide service to subscribers known to be serial infringers. They're downloading music, people. They're not serial killers. I love that. Serial infringers. Like it's, you know...
Like it's an accurate term. Just means repeat.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you gotta, you know, fucking spice it up.
You know, you put some work into it, like aggressive copyright terrorist or something. I mean, you know, have some fun with it. But in reality, Verizon operated its service as an attractive tool and safe haven for infringement, unquote, the plaintiff said, noting that Verizon derived a direct financial benefit from subscribers' repeated infringements by failing to take action as part of an effective repeater infringement program. Again, the DMCA doesn't say they have to have a repeat infringer program. That's what the other companies want. But the DMCA just says they have to respond to, you know, complaints.
They're not profiting from the piracy. They're profiting from providing an internet connection. What the people do with it is kind of them. Yeah, go after it. People.
Well, that's too hard. Sell ammunition.
You sell ammunition, you're not responsible for what the person puts it into or where they fire it at.
That's actually true.
I mean, you can sell a dude 9mm fucking ammo and he tries to put it in AK-47. Is that your fucking problem? Nope.
The plaintiffs note that Verizon's published, quote, copyright infringement repeat infringer policy, unquote, prohibits subscribers from using the ISP's systems or servers in a manner that infringes third-party intellectual property rights. The policy further
Wait,
states...
Wait, I broke my EULA?
Yeah.
Really? They going with that one? You know how many people break their EULA every fucking day? Not because they're doing it deliberately, because they don't read it.
Yeah. The policy further states that under Section 512 of the DMCA, Verizon terminates repeat infringers, quote, in appropriate circumstances, unquote, as in they haven't been paying their bill. one of the problems, the labels claim, is that Verizon actively attempts to thwart copyright holders' efforts to inform the ISP of infringement. Okay. Putting aside the legalities, a system where you derive no financial benefit and you're simply dealing with people whining about piracy, I would make it as hard as fucking possible to send those complaints in, because all they do is cost Verizon money, both in the fact that they're supposed to be terminating, customer contracts, and they have to employ somebody to sit there and sift through that shit and figure it out. The complaint describes Verizon's anti-piracy cooperation program as having, quote, onerous conditions, unquote, that require, okay, here comes the part I wanted to talk about, that require participants to pay burdensome fees for automated processes such as IP address lookups and notice forwarding. Rights holders are further required to waive their copyright claims, indemnify Verizon, while keeping the terms of the program confidential, the labels say. That's the key right there. Burdensome fees for Verizon saw this process and said, we'll set up a portal and charge for access. You want to send us complaints? Here's where you can, subscribe to our program for it. And that's why these people are bitching, because Verizon wants to charge them for sending these complaints in. They want to be able to just flood them with impunity, because that's what they do. That's what I've seen them do at every ISP that I've looked at, that I've talked to people who work at. That's what they do. They just flood the ISPs with these things because it costs them nothing. Verizon put a cost on that, and they're wetting the bed. I don't blame Verizon for doing it, because it costs them money. They have to employ somebody to sort through these things. Rights holders who prefer not to utilize the program are required to send notices via email. The labels claim these notices aren't reviewed, processed, forwarded to subscribers, or even tracked to ensure repeated infringers are handled in line with Verizon policy. Given that Verizon's response to infringement notices falls, I'd love to see what the actual text was. Given Verizon's response to infringement notices falls short of what the label considers to be the threshold for avoiding liability, they predict the consequences of the ISP's, quote, support of and profit from infringement are obvious and stark, unquote. Attached to the complaint, Exhibit A contains a non-exhaustive list of the copyright works, so they've just got a list of all the complaints they've sent. Documents over 400 pages long, with each track listed representing potential liability for Ryzen as a willful, intentional... Yeah, because they want to get the full... claims based on maximum statutory damages of $150,000 per copyrighted work. Statutory max $150,000 per infringed work is also applied to count two. So yeah, they're trying to make the number as big as possible by doing the each individual claim and saying, oh, well, we want, you know, $150,000 per claim, and we've been sending all these things in. But that's just it, though. Verizon put a program together to handle these things, and they charge a subscription fee to access that because they have to pay somebody to process this shit. I don't blame them for putting a fee on it. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Because I've seen what these things do. When I worked for the school, I wrote an entire system to poll several of our network systems, build a session information, and put it in a database so I could then have an automated script look up these complaints. Because at first, those complaints were supposed to be one of my duties in that job, and they took all day. You remember me bitching about it, where I spent, that's all I did for days was these complaints. And I said, there's got to be a better way. So I started looking to our systems, and I automated it, and I built a system, and I could handle it in an hour. And the funniest part about that was people in the school lost their fucking mind because I was processing all these complaints that people had been, because they had student employees doing them before, and they were just deleting most of them because they wouldn't get through all of them in a day. So they'd do like five and just delete the rest. And honestly, these days, that probably was the right move. But I thought I was being clever. It's like, I'll write an automated system. I'll build something to handle this. And so it took this, you know, onerous thing that was taking, you know, me and student employees all day to do, and it just took me an hour. And then I could do whatever else I wanted for the rest of the day. So I ended up having time to do research and go break into things. It was, you know, it was good stuff for me. But I nowadays I kind of think it would have been better just to be deleting them, because these assholes, I mean, they're just literally making noise at this point. And since they can't catch the subscribers, they're going after the ISP.
Well, they're trying to justify their jobs. They spent years and years going after the fucking individuals. They couldn't get shit out of it. Like, you know, we're going to lose our division. Let's go and try and target something else.
But yeah, so Verizon builds a portal, puts a price on it, and says, yeah, we'll take care of this if you pay us.
Yeah.
And they lost their shit because now they can't just blast these things out for free. It's actually the same business model that spammers and scammers use. Because it costs them nothing to send out millions of emails.
Yeah, they're just looking for one whale.
So, anyways. I don't know. Madman, you were quiet. You have anything on that?
Well, I will say it's not quite just justifying their existence, because they do have a legitimate complaint. If you're stealing a movie, you are... kind of stealing a movie.
True.
I do think that our current penalties for it are a little onerous, because it's not, I'm stealing $50,000 worth of product.
$150,000.
I'm downloading the newest movie, I'm stealing $15 worth of shit. That's how much the DVD is going to cost when it first comes out. Or, I don't know, it might have gone up $20.
I mean, what was it last time I went to the movies? $15 for the movie ticket and probably 30 for food. So of $50 most, like a movie ticket for a new release.
Yeah, but I paid for the popcorn. I'm not shoplifting.
Yeah, true.
The movie ticket, dude. I'm going with the movie ticket.
Yeah, $15. I mean, you know, for a movie ticket, or I guess, you know, whatever, what's a new DVD, 30? I haven't looked in a while. I guess inflation might be higher now, but
I don't know, man. I just pirate everything these days. I don't know what the cost of a DVD is.
Yo ho, yo ho. But yeah, I mean, shit. I definitely agree with you there that it's ridiculous, the whole system, and it's because the laws were written against. The laws were basically written with the idea that you would have a whole nother publishing company just taking books and reprinting them. That was the original intent, was to keep people from reprinting somebody else's books. And then they just kept applying it to other things like recordings and movies. And
remember the big claim back when they'd all started going digital? No, it's going to get so much cheaper now that we don't have to provide a physical copy. I haven't seen the price come down, have you? Yeah. Now they just fucking stick ads in it and charge you the same fucking price. And then chop the fucking movie up depending on, you know, who's crying the loudest about whatever's wrong with the movie.
Oh, yeah. I went to watch the finale of The Boys today, and they put a ton of ads in that compared to what it had been. I was getting pissed. I know they're trying to annoy me into paying them the extra $5 a month to take the ads out, but I kind of refuse to do it on principle because it's like, you know, fuck you.
We can fix your ad problem.
Oh, yeah. I absolutely should have just, you know, I absolutely should have gone somewhere else. Although F movies are dead again. So.
Yeah, usually find if it goes down, I'll be back up in a day or so.
Anyways, but yeah, I was really annoyed because I was also annoyed because the show hasn't been nearly as good, but
they're getting away from the comics and are going with TV writers. They're not doing an adaptation anymore.
They put a whole bunch of shit in the season that didn't need to be in there that added nothing to it. Just padded for time. Anyways.
It got funnier once I realized that I was trying to draw from reality.
Yeah.
Like, that just made it even more ridiculous. I'm like, this show's just getting better now that I know the truth. I don't even think the comic book was going in that direction, though,
It wasn't.
Yeah. Well, no, I didn't think so.
The story in the comic was that they did eventually attack the White House and try to take over the country. But it wasn't Cloak and Dagger. It wasn't this weird version of January 6th they're arguing about. It was a direct attack. I mean, it was a comic book. The superheroes are trying to take over the White House by literally just fighting the army. You know,
because that's what would happen. This is literally what would happen.
So... yeah, the whole thing's dumb, but whatever.
It's a TV show.
Well, my point was that they stuck a bunch of new ads in it. It was really fucking annoying. Because it's like they hadn't been doing that, and then now they've just, you know, really gotten they're getting obnoxious with it.
Yeah, it's a subscription or it's ads. Both annoying. Pick one.
Yeah.
That's how you're making your money.
Next up from The Verge. This is the one political story, and the only reason I'm doing this one is because it is pretty stark contrast from stuff we've talked about previously. So politics aside, yeah, just 2 days after the attempted assassination of former President Donald Trump's Donald Trump's rally in Butler, Pennsylvania, the FBI announced it gained access to the shooter's phone. The Bureau has not disclosed how it broke into the phone or what's been found on it, but the speed with which the agency did so is significant, and the security experts say it points to increased efficiency of phone hacking tools. In a call with reporters on Sunday, the Bureau said field agents in Pennsylvania had tried and failed to break into the shooter's phone. I don't feel like saying the guy's name. The device was then sent to the FBI lab in Quantico, Virginia. Cooper Quinton, security researcher and senior staff technologist with the Electronic Frontier Foundation, said law enforcement agencies have several tools at their disposal to extract data from phones. Quote, almost every police department in the nation has a device called the Cellbrite, which is a device built for extracting data from phones. It also has some capability to unlock phones, unquote, Quinton said. Cellbrite, which is based in Israel, is one of several companies that provides mobile device forensic tools to law enforcement. Okay. Most of these things. They're a Raspberry Pi in a box running custom software. Or a similar kind of machine. Just going to throw that out there because they charge stupid amount of money for these things. And when you actually see what they are, it's just like, really? But
it's software. I'm embarrassed for the FBI that it took them that long.
Well, considering they used to not be able to do it at all. So... Yeah, several companies that provides mobile device forensic tools to law enforcement. Third-party MDTFs vary in efficiency and cost, and it's likely the FBI has its own in-house tools as well. Last year, TechCrunch reported that Cellbrite had asked users to keep the use of its technology hush-hush. Quote, it seems reasonable to me that the field office there in Pennsylvania wouldn't have some of the more advanced techniques for breaking into modern phones that they have at Quantico, unquote. Quinton told The Verge hours before the FBI announced that it successfully gained access to the phone. Quote, I have little doubt that Quantico will be able to break into the phone, whether it's in-house or whether it's to outside help, like from Cellbrite, for example, unquote. A 2020 investigation by the Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit organization Upturn found that more than 2,000 law enforcement agencies in all 50 states and the District of Columbia had access to MDTFs. GrayKey, among the most expensive and advanced of these tools, cost between $15,000 and $30,000, according to Upturn's report. GrayShift, the company behind GrayKey, announced in March that its Magnet GrayKey device has, quote, full support, unquote, for Apple iOS 17, Samsung Galaxy S24 devices, and Pixel 6 and 7 devices. For law enforcement, third-party MDTFs are an effective way to get around tech companies' hesitancy to help break into customers' phones. In previous instances of mass shootings or domestic terrorism, the FBI had spent weeks or months trying to break into suspects' phones. The Bureau famously butted heads with Apple in late 2015 after the company refused to help law enforcement get around the encryption on the San Bernardino, California shooter's iPhone. Earlier in the following year, Apple refused
to... I think that's kind of a disingenuous statement. It's not that they refused to help, it's that they don't have back doors.
They literally couldn't help them.
That's not refusing.
Yeah. Earlier in the following year, Apple refused a federal court order to help the FBI access the shooter's phone, which the company said would effectively require it to build a backdoor for the iPhone's encryption software. Quote, the government is asking Apple to hack our own users and undermine decades of security advances that protect our customers, unquote, Apple CEO Tim Cook wrote in a February 2016 open letter. The FBI did have access to a backup of the shooter's phone that had been uploaded to his iCloud account. But the last backup appeared to have occurred 6 weeks before the shooting, hence the FBI's desire to unlock the phone. In his letter, the Trump shooter, claimed that the FBI... Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's just their names are similar. In his letter, Cook claimed the FBI had asked Apple to modify iOS so passcodes could be input electronically in what he called a brute force attack. Quote, the FBI may use different words to describe this tool, but make no mistake, building a version of iOS that bypasses security in this way would undeniably create a backdoor, unquote, Cook wrote. Quote, while we believe the FBI's intentions are good, it would be wrong for the government to force us to build a backdoor into our products. And ultimately, we feel that this demand would undermine the very freedoms and liberty our government is meant to protect, unquote. So... yeah, the article goes on. Basically, that they kept this case against Apple, they eventually dropped it, but they were eventually able to get into the phone, but apparently they spent $1 million to do it. And that's because Apple legitimately did not have a backdoor. Like, they couldn't help them crack it because they had used real encryption on these phones. They had nothing to crack it with. And then they said, well, can you make a version of the OS that's easier for us to attack? And they're like, no! It's dumb. Why would we do that? So, you know, because we talked about it on Decking at the time. I remember some of these conversations. It wasn't that they were, you know, mad that Apple wouldn't do it. It was that they were literally trying to force them to weaken the security on their devices. And, you know, there's a legitimate conversation there about the ability to serve warrants on these things and be able to get into them. But at the same time, real encryption doesn't work that way. If you're using real encryption, there are two ways to attack it. You either have the key, either through brute force or obtaining it from some other means, or that you find a flaw in the encryption and use that to reverse it and get the plain text back. And most of the time, with well-published, well-used encryption, you're not finding flaws in it. So you have to have the key, which basically means brute force if you don't have some way to extract it from something else. So for Apple to be able to help them get into this phone, they would have had to have stored the encryption key somewhere, which they weren't doing. It only existed on the phone because that's how you do proper security. You control the keys. So they would have required completely reengineering how Apple manages the keys. They would have had to back them up in iCloud so that they could then respond to a government subpoena with them. This also meant that a stash of keys is sitting up there in case, you know, somebody ever hacks into it. So it's not a good design to do that from a pure security standpoint. Well, from a data protection standpoint might be a better way to say that.
And it makes Apple a target for everyone.
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm going to have to rephrase that. More of a target for everyone.
Absolutely. Microsoft already has this problem with people trying to get into Office 365 and succeeding. And by the way, Microsoft does backup keys. That whole recover your Microsoft account thing, yeah, they will back up your BitLocker keys unless you go in and specifically tell them not to. So, you know, just something to be aware of. I don't think Google does. I haven't done a deep mess with an Android device in a while to look into that, but I don't think they do. So what a lot of these boxes are doing is they found a flaw in Apple's implementation somewhere, and they're able to use that to either bypass the PIN or get in, brute it some other means, basically sit there and try to guess the passcodes, because most passcodes are numeric and they're fairly short. Less than 10 characters. So if you could electronically sit there and do the passcode over and over and over again without it locking out the phone, because you can set them so that after so many tries, it just erases your phone, right? Which is the correct thing to do from a security standpoint, because if somebody's sitting there, well, I guess that's where you have to make a judgment call. What's more important, getting your data on the device wiped if you think somebody's attacking it, or being able to try 20 bad passcodes, you know what I mean? So, but you can absolutely set most of these things to erase the device after so many bad attempts. And it'll come up on the screen and warn you. It's like, hey, you know, two more attempts and we're erasing the phone, right? You know, that's a thing. So what they're asking for is to take those protections off so they can sit there and guess passwords till they get it. Now, if they've got an offline backup of the thing, you can, you know, attack it sideways, basically try to decrypt it outside of Apple's software so you can sit there and guess keys till you get it. But I imagine that's what a lot of these things are doing from a technical perspective, is you're taking a backup of the device and then trying to attack it outside of Apple's protections. I guess a good example of that would be taking an encrypted laptop, popping the hard drive out, connecting it to another machine with a dock, and then guessing passwords till you get into the hard drive, as an example. BitLocker keys are significantly longer than a phone PIN, but I mean, it's the same principle. If you're using a Windows BitLocker, if you're using TrueCrypt or one of the other systems, their keys can get even more ridiculous, and Linux puts a few layers in there if you're doing like LLM encryption or one of the other encryptions. So that's the other question, is do you even know what encryption they're using if it's not, you know, a standard Windows laptop or iPhone or Android device, right? So, anyways, the article goes on detailing a bunch of things about how the FBI used to have a hell of a time getting into phones. So the fact that they were able to get into the Trump shooter's phone in 2 days means that they have built up quite a program around getting into phones.
So I wonder if Apple's tried to buy any of these tools just so they can use them to fix their shit.
Oh, I'm sure they do. I'm sure all these companies do, or at least try to get them. A lot of them will run bug bounty programs saying, hey, give it to us, we'll give you money. So, I mean, that's basically what a bug bounty is paying for the vulnerabilities and hoping to get them before they get published. It would be irresponsible of them not to, really. But then again, most companies aren't necessarily responsible, so I don't fucking I would hope that they do. Anyways, They've got some quotes in here, people basically saying the same thing, talking about brooding a, you know, 4-digit passcode or a 6-digit PIN. Tools available from third-party vendors. Yeah, so I don't know. I guess something to keep in mind. You know, it would be nice to assume that your law enforcement agencies are generally on the up and up and only trying to get into things legitimately. Yeah, I don't know that you could keep that assumption for very long, but it'd be nice.
I used to, but then they stopped being good faith actors.
Right? So,
I mean, it's their fault if you don't trust them at this point.
You know, and you know, it gets into that, but it's also, it's just not how the technology works. There is no such thing as a back door or a master key, or, you know, I mean, we could engineer something like that, but it's going to have a ton of weaknesses versus just doing it right.
Yeah, but then the bad guys can get it. That's my big problem with the whole idea of a back door. I, in principle, don't have a problem with the whole cop showing up with a warrant and getting the info.
Yeah, I mean, if everything's on the up and up and going through the right systems and, you know, proper warrant, proper court case, you know, investigating legitimate crimes, absolutely.
The big issue is with the whole back door is that means there's a bunch of people out there without warrants that want to steal my shit that can get into this, and they're trying 24/7 to get my shit. The only reason they're not super successful is there are so many targets, they're not targeting me specifically.
Well, and on top of that, you now have, besides law enforcement, an entire contingent of people who work at whatever company we're talking about, who you have to be concerned about. Do you trust everyone who works at Microsoft? Do you trust everyone who works at Apple or Google? Do you really think one of them doesn't have a gambling debt or a hooker problem or some other reason that the right person showing up with a suitcase full of cash isn't going to get them whatever the fuck they want? Yeah, I know it's basic B-movie bullshit, but it's not like that stuff doesn't happen.
Yeah, that's how corporate espionage works. I mean, there's a reason the Russians got the bomb, and it wasn't because they had good scientists. It's because they had good honeypots and cash.
So, it's the same problem. You know, you don't have to think, it's not somebody's going to hack into it. It's somebody's going to pay off somebody at that company to give them backdoor access. That's how that whole group of kids they caught in City of London was getting into stuff. They were just flat out paying people and you know, paying employees to give them access to shit. So, anyways, I don't know. I've got nothing else on that. I just, it's worth being aware that law enforcement can get into these devices fairly quickly. And again, assuming everyone's on the up and up, I don't have a problem with that necessarily. I do think the NSA's whole NOBIS policy is kind of bullshit and they're dirty about maintaining it, but that's another problem. Because they won't tell companies that there's issues with their software as long as they think nobody else is using it but them. And they've actively worked against companies to keep them from fixing stuff that they're using. But that's a different problem. But yeah, I don't like the idea of them trying to force companies to put backdoors and stuff. And again, you have to worry about abuse. I guess if you're worried about something, don't put it on a digital device. Might be the advice, I guess.
Sound advice.
Just be aware that law enforcement might be able to get their hands on it if it comes up. So, I don't know.
Maybe just don't photograph yourself or video yourself committing crimes.
Yeah, or maybe just don't commit the crime. Or if you're gonna, commit
crime, leave your phone at home.
Yeah. Or, if you have to document your crime, do it like a regular psychopath and cut up a magazine and glue it back together on a piece of paper. Exactly. It's more interesting that way anyways.
Oh, the art of the serial killer collage is going away.
As newspapers fall, Mad Men, it gets harder and harder to make those ransom notes. Just remember, kid, don't buy modern printing paper. Make sure you buy old books that aren't dye identified.
Next article is from Bleeping Computer. Kaspersky offers free security software for 6 months in U.S. goodbye. Kaspersky is offering free security products for 6 months and tip for staying safe as a parting gift to consumers in the United States. The company decided to close its business and lay off employees in the U.S. after the U.S. government added Kaspersky to the entity list, a catalog of foreign individuals, companies, and organizations deemed a national security concern. And a message, actually, that entity list is a big deal. Like, banks get that list and they're not allowed to send them money and checks. Like, even if somebody's legitimately trying to pay them for something, like, the bank can't process it. It's a crime. In a message addressed only to users in the U.S., Kaspersky is thanking its customers for choosing and trusting its products over the years. As a token of farewell, the company is offering users in the U.S. some of its security software for free of charge for half a year. Quote, with Kaspersky leaving the U.S., we'd like to pay you back with the least we can, gifting you a selection of our security solutions for free for 6 months. You know, short list of general tips, back up the data, be wary of links. It's like, you can tell some of the people working at Kaspersky in the U.S. were actually, like, really just legitimately trying to do the security work and probably weren't involved in whatever political bullshit is shutting them down. So, like,
yeah,
you know, somebody's trying to at least, like, hey, here's six months, so you have time to go find something else because we can't give it to you anymore. I think this is legitimately just somebody in their, and the 6 month limitation is likely due to the Department of Commerce, Bureau of Industry and Security, banning sales of distribution of Kaspersky products, including updates in the United States, starting September 29th. So, yeah, it means that after that date, U.S. users of Kaspersky products will no longer be received to automatic updates and antivirus definitions to the software. Instead, they need to manually install them via Kaspersky's site if made available, potentially decreasing the security of the product. So, yeah, it sounds like somebody who works there was legitimately just like, well, we can't do business here anyways. Let's at least, you know, try to help them out as they have to move to something else.
I mean, that's pretty cool of them.
It is. Well, and again, before all the Russia shit started up, Kaspersky actually had a pretty good reputation in the security industry. Like, their AV and stuff wasn't bad. It's just they're headquartered in Moscow and politics being what they are. So, yeah.
I wonder how many U.S. companies that's going to end up hurting. Because it's going to be the same way the other way around. Oh, you're not part of our allied country group? We're going to stop using that product.
I don't know. I suspect, I mean, in China, they've already got an analog for basically every major U.S. package anyways, with the exception of Windows, but I think they just pirate that mostly anyways. So, I don't know. I think we are going to start seeing. We saw it in the 80s where the different regions kind of had their own technology stacks, but that wasn't like intentional or due to geopolitics. I think that was more just geography. The internet wasn't really a thing. Everyone was independently developing their own stuff, usually based off the early stuff that the U.S. did, but.
That was it. It was all independent development. And then whatever was best got woven together to what you see today.
Well, there's a reason most of our PCs are based off the IBM design rather than, say, the MSX. And arguably, things might have been better if they were based off the MSX.
Yeah. The world will never know of.
Or the, what was the other one in Japan besides the MSX? The PC-98, was that the other standard? I think that was the other standard for a DOS-style machine.
You're pushing me.
Well, of course, then you had the reverse of that. Actually, I was going to say the other one was that the BBC stuff, the BBC Micro, the Acorn, all the British machines actually were pretty were independently developed and interesting. And the gag of that one is you could argue that they flip it around and won in the end, because BBC Micros developed Acorn. Acorn eventually developed into, today we call it ARM. So, yeah, you know, their pedigree for the all of our mobile chips goes back to the British Micros in the 80s. So, maybe. Yeah. Anyways, I just saw the clock. We'll just rush through these last couple of things here. This is from The Verge. Disney's internal Slack was leaked by hackers mad about AI. I doubt they were really mad about AI. I think more they just got into it and that was their excuse. Over a terabyte of data supposedly obtained from Disney's internal messaging channels has been leaked online by self-proclaimed activist or hacktivist group, including login credentials, code, images, and information about unreleased projects. The anonymous group, calling itself Null Bulge. Null Bulge. Are they saying they have no balls?
Bulge. I think they're saying they don't like fat people.
Oh, okay. Could be that.
Possibly.
Has claimed responsibility for the leak, alleged to having gained access to the company's Slack messaging data via a compromised computer of a Disney employee. Quote, anything we could get our hands on, we downloaded and packaged up, unquote, the group said on X, claiming to have obtained, quote, 1.1 terabytes of files and chat messages, unquote, from almost 10,000 corporate Disney Slack channels. Disney has since confirmed to the Wall Street Journal that it's investigating the matter. Null Bulge alluded to possessing the stolen data on July the 12th, hours prior to leaking Disney's Slack archive. Wall Street Journal reports the files contain internal Disney conversations about software development, recruitment, website maintenance, and employee programs dating back to at least 2019. According to Eurogamer, details regarding the upcoming gaming collaborations and unannounced video game sequels obtained via leaked files have also started emerging online. Null Bulge says its goal is to protect artists' rights and compensation, telling the Wall Street Journal it had targeted Disney, quote, due to how it handled artist contracts, its approach to AI, and its pretty blatant disregard of the consumer, unquote.
Oh, fuck off. Fuck off, you hacktivist twat. It's the only thing you could get into at the day. God damn it. Don't fuck around with this hacktivist shit. You tried that in the early 2000s. Bullshit. You did it for profit and you did it for the lulz.
I don't think they did it for profit because they just dumped it on Twitter or X.
Well, they did it for the lulz then. They're not doing it to protect anyone. Fucking bullshit artists.
I mean, that is what would be in Slack channels, right? So, I mean, yeah, it's like, but okay.
You're not, oh, I'm doing it on behalf of those who make millions and millions of dollars at Disney. You know, those suffering actors in Hollywood. I'm doing it for them. You fat Cheeto dust ridden faggot. You're sitting there poor as shit, but you're doing it for these rich people. Fuck, cry me a river.
Last article.
Sorry, man. That just fucking pushed my buttons.
I thought you would enjoy it. Last article I have is from Bleeping Computer. We don't really have time to do it. Facebook ads for Windows desktop themes push malware. Don't download Windows themes from Facebook. That's basically what this article says. Don't download software from Facebook. Seriously. So, yeah, apparently a bunch of these Windows themes are malwared up and put an info stealer on there. And then
does that count towards your good behavior bond? Public service announcements?
Sure.
Don't download Facebook shit? Crap.
All right. I'll do this. Yo! What I have for you in Digital Dojo tonight is fucking hilarious. I want to see somebody using this to take notes in a meeting. It's a set of Linux shell scripts to allow you to type on the keyboard, well, to type on the laptop, I should say, by slamming the laptop lid shut in Morse code. It is Linux only, unfortunately. Because it is just a set of shell scripts, but they do have instructions on installing them, setting up ACPID, and disabling the screen lock so that you can just sit there and close the lid. You're triggering the screen close sensor and using that to bang out Morse code with your laptop lid.
Yeah. Now make sure it's still under warranty, and you delete this program when you go to claim your warranty for a broken laptop.
But, and watch where you put your ink pen.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
But he's got a GIF on the page demonstrating the use of it, and it, I mean, you can type at 100 words per hour. I mean, it's just crazy. I love it. This is hilarious. We need more shit like this. This is great.
Yes.
We're at time. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site, the BBS. I've got to do something with the website. It's like broken at the moment, and I'm not sure what's changed. And I haven't had time to dig into it because shit's been nuts. Madman, closing thoughts.
Yo, if you go for a twofer in the suicide booth, which estate do you sue for copyright infringement on the suicide booth?
I don't know, but some lawyer's going to get very rich answering that question. Are you? Closing thoughts?
I'm just thinking you're killing yourself. This is not the time to be a Jew. Just pay the fucking $10. You know what I mean? It's not like you need the money going forward.
Wow.
I mean, you know, modern solutions for simple problems.
Oh my
Just
God.
Fucking pay the money, you cheapskate cunt. No wonder you want to kill yourself. Your life is miserable because you don't want to spend the extra $10 for comfort.
Hey, this is the problem with the current generation. You're not looking forward to your
retirement.
No, it's not retirement. I want to leave something for my family. Not $20.
Yeah, it's a good looking corpse.
A cheeseburger to cry in.
Oh, wow.
Are you allowed to get naked before you go to the suicide booth?
Yeah, what are they going to do? Kill you?
Exactly.
I think you can do anything you want in that thing. It's just going to be less reusable. You're dead. What are they going to do to you afterwards?
Yeah, just pay the extra $10. Don't be a cheapskate.
At least try to strike an interesting pose before you pass.
I have bone eyed. End the show.
Transitional zombie apocalypse. Your satisfaction is very important to us.
God hates Australia.
Man, I'm sorry about this. I hope this doesn't ruin your day.